Standing for truth in a fake world. The Biblical Worldview Summit seeks to apply the Lordship of Christ to all areas of life, to understand the times and to know what God's people should do. So how do we stand for truth in a fake world? The first priority in the full armor of God is truth. Put on the belt of truth. Gird your waist with truth. So much of the world in which we live is fake. It's not just fake news. In Russia, they had two newspapers under communism. One was called Izvestia, which means news, and the other was called Pravda, which means truth. And the people in Russia used to say to us, there's nothing new in Izvestia and there's nothing true in Pravda. In other words, there's nothing new in news and there's nothing true in truth. Pravda, truth. This is one of the most famous cover pictures. And the banner headline was, "Thank you, Comrade Stalin, for my happy childhood." Now, this little girl had good reason to have a happy childhood. Her father and mother were senior members of the Politburo of the Soviet Union. She was in the inner circle. However, within 6 months of this picture being taken and published in Pravda, her father was shot by order of Stalin, and her mother was placed in a labor camp where she died of starvation within 18 months. Within 2 years, this little girl had died as well. That's the poster child of Pravda, the poster child of communism. Thank you, Comrade Stalin, for my happy childhood. Some of you might have seen this picture. This came out when the US media was trying to galvanize America to bomb Syria and to engage in a war in Syria. And the title of this is, "Little Boy Sleeps Between the Graves of His Parents." A gut-wrenching picture, but totally and utterly fake, completely posed. There's not even any bodies there. They put up fake graves and had a fake orphan sleep between the apparent corpses of his fake parents. Totally fake, completely rigged, just like the picture that some of you might have seen, although I don't think most of you were alive then. In 1991, when America wanted to invade Kuwait to restore democracy to a country that never had it, I don't know how you restore something that they never had, but anyway, they had this tearful Kuwaiti speaking about how the Iraqis came into the hospital, into the children's ICU, and took the babies out of the incubator, literally dumped the babies on the ground and just looted the incubators. Except that that never happened. And this was not a nurse, although she's dressed as a nurse. Turned out she is the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador, and this is her first act in an acting career. That's how they launch wars. Fake atrocities. A lot of fake news. Most of what comes across your screen, if it's from the mainstream media, is as fake as it could be. The truth about the media is they hear no truth, they see no truth, they speak no truth, or they flat out ignore the truth. And this looks like a lot of news media. But would it interest you to know that they're all owned by six individuals? Six people, all of whom are secular humanist globalists, own every single major news media outlet in the United States. In our country, it's down to two. And in Britain, it's not much better. The media has become an instrument of mass deception. There's also fake history. My history teacher in Bulawayo told me, beware the victor's version. Wartime propaganda morphs into peacetime textbooks. Truth does not fear investigation. And when there are laws to stop you investigating, and there's persecution against those who dare to come out with an alternative view of anything, you know they're not protecting the truth. Because truth does not fear being investigated. It is never virtuous to be gullible. The simple believes every word, but the prudent considers well his steps. There's also fake education. I could say a lot about that, but we've got a whole presentation dealing with education coming up in the next day, so I'll leave it to that. There's fake economics, and if you have not seen the film Inside Job, which is a phenomenal documentary, documenting how the biggest financial economic crash in our lifetime, the 2008 economics derivatives bubble, which cost, as I said, over $20 trillion, it lost tens of millions of people their jobs, their homes, their pensions, and their livelihoods. It was catastrophic. And how did it come about? By fake economics. They were selling on Wall Street worthless derivatives which were based upon debt, which was based upon more debt, which was based upon more debt. The parliament, well, the people of Iceland imprisoned the entire government and all their bankers as a result of the investigation. We are not aware of one single prosecution in America for stealing trillions of dollars from their citizens, the debt of which was passed on to the taxpayer. This documentary, which we have in our library, documents it with ministers of economics of many countries, Singapore and so on, explaining what had happened, and absolutely gut-wrenching how these criminals, who were able to declare their companies bankrupt and leave with personal worths in the hundreds of billions, hundreds of millions, or in the billions, while a company needed to be bailed out by billions and trillions of dollars of taxpayers' money, while they had personal worth soaring into the stratosphere. And that's what brought Obama to power. It was the October surprise in 2008. And he promised to deal with the people responsible, and he did. As I said, the Obama administration was the most Wall Street-controlled government in American history. He appointed the criminals into every key position of power. The very people who had stolen the livelihoods and pensions and savings of tens of millions of Americans and hundreds of millions of people worldwide were rewarded with cabinet positions and the best positions, and none of them got prosecuted, none of them saw jail time, at least not in America. In Singapore and Iceland they did. They still have some justice there. But not in America, according to this documentary. If you think that capitalism and communism are deadly enemies, you will be frustrated when you read a book like Wall Street and How They Bankrolled the Bolshevik Revolution by Professor Anthony Sutton. He also wrote The Best Enemy Money Can Buy. You will be astounded to know how Wall Street bankrolled not just the Bolshevik Revolution and gave Levi Bronstein, also known as Leon Trotsky, who was in the Bronx in New York, in exile from Russia at the time when the Bolshevik Revolution erupted. He was given hundreds of millions of dollars in gold to go back, launch the Red Army, and that's why they had the best of the best of everything, weapons, funding, all the KGB, or they were called the Cheka then, dressed out in full leathers, Rolls Royces, the best of everything, armored trains. The Bolshevik Revolution was the Wall Street bankers' revolution. The Bolsheviks and the banksters are working together. And it shouldn't surprise us, because actually, in our own country, 1995, 1 year after Mandela came to power, Harry Oppenheimer, CEO of De Beers and Anglo-American, boasted in a full op-ed piece in the Star, the Daily Mail, and all the other major newspapers in the country. This is our accomplishment. For 30 years, Anglo-American has been working to, 35 years, sorry, been working to replace the National Party with the ANC. That's not a conspiracy theory. The CEO of Anglo-American said, we worked for 35 years to subvert government and bring a revolution to this country. And the capitalists boasted that the communist revolution was their doing. It's not the only example, I'll give you a few hundred more. There's fake science. Now, I'm not going to say much about that. We've flown in Dr. Philip Stott to deal with that. Evolutionism, billions of years, Big Bang, once upon time there was nothing, and then there was something, and that something became everything. Just a whole lot of time and a whole lot of nothing made everything. Don't worry about the Bible or time or the church, just sinking sand. Atheists see no evidence for God, not even when they look at the stars. Atheism is a dead-end street. Evolutionists reject the truth of God to embrace the lies of Satan, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie and worshipped and served the Creator rather than they served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Later tonight, you'll have the opportunity, God willing, to see Evolution versus God, a great way the master evangelistic form. There's a lot of fake statistics. We can give you quite a few examples. For example, the man, Bernard Nathanson, who was head of the Abortion Rights Action Group in America, he admitted afterwards, we totally fabricated, we completely thumbsucked all the statistics of backstreet abortions and how many mothers were dying of backstreet abortions. He said there was no statistics, we just totally invented it, Congress accepted it, the media repeated it, and I know that ARAG in South Africa, and Dr. Marge died, did just the same. They totally sucked out their thumbs statistics that didn't exist whatsoever. This is normal. There's a lot of fake signs out there. I've seen blind men checking the messages, counting the money. And you can't trust government signs on the road either. And they can't even spell school. And if you obey all government signs, you could get into some serious trouble. And I don't know how many people's cars can go 8 kilometers an hour. You might have to get out and push. But it's always comforting to see your taxes spent well. Then you get fake genders. It boggles the brain. I thought there were only 2, but then they told me there were 26. I just learned today that there's 70. I don't know how they worked this out. So imagine this discussion. I identify as a non-binary, gender-fluid, pansexual. So the guy trying to impress her says, I'm mentally ill too. Now, I used to like KLM as an airline, but for stupid adverts, this has got to be one of the best self-defeating, self-contradictory adverts ever. It doesn't matter who you clip with. Well, I can tell you only one of those is going to work. It doesn't matter who you click with. So if they go around and say, your seatbelt's on, and say, but it doesn't matter who I click with, will they be happy with that? I mean, seriously. And then you get this kind of advert. I'm no electrician, but I'm pretty sure that 2 of those will not work. And then you get this college student who's kicked out of class by his professor because he said, but there's only 2 genders. Can you imagine anything more horrific than to arrogantly assert there's only 2 genders? There was a t-shirt being sold on Amazon, there are more than 2 genders. And then you had to choose whether you wanted a male or a female, large, small, extra large, and so on, in ordering. Where's all the different gender options? They only gave you 2 gender options to buy the there's more than 2 genders t-shirts. Well, it's science actually, isn't it? Biology? But get out of here with your science. Gender's a social construct. But there are only 2 genders. Triggered. It's amazing. You can say something today that nobody would have raised an eyebrow to a few years ago. There's only 2 genders. And now you can get into trouble, lose your job, get kicked out of college. Then you get fake marriages. I mean, you can call it what you like, but it's not a marriage. That's not a ministry either. And you can make it Hindu, Buddhist, whatever. It's not. And as for a bearded bride, I don't know, really. These people are very disturbed individuals. Now, this, by the way, is hate speech. We support traditional marriage. One man, one woman. You've got to spell that out now. One man, one woman. We read in Romans 1, therefore God gave them over in the sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie. God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their woman exchanged natural relations with unnatural ones. In the same way, men also abandoned natural relations with women, were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their perversion. Talk about politically incorrect terminology. This is all from Romans 1. Although they knew God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continued to do these very things, but also approved of those who practiced them. Well, friends of mine in the States made this very good protest in 2013 after Obama's government announced gay marriage. Marriage is one man and one woman. The court is in rebellion to God. God has ruled on what marriage is. There's a lot of fake people out there. In fact, on Facebook, there are people who think that they're talking to a young teenage girl when actually it's some pedophile in his 50s. And the fake profiles, but it's not just fake profiles on social media, they're fake people that you meet. Well, of course, in Hollywood, they specialize in it. What's very disturbing is the fake heroes out there. Now, I know some real heroes, and I try to focus on real heroes in our Reformation Society and in books like The Greatest Century of Missions and Great Century of Reformation, Great Century of Victorious Christians Who Changed the World. Focus on real heroes. But today there's this obsession with superheroes, which are fakes, every last one of them. Would it surprise you to know that the entire Marvel comic superhero galaxy were created in the First World War and then developed more in the Second World War for wartime propaganda? In fact, they were propagating. Do you see the Soviet Union flag of Russia at the far left, Chinese flag on the far right? This was particularly Marvel launched the superheroes to sell war bonds. Now, how's this for mercenary activities put into comics? Here's a new gun from the folks from back home, soldier. Yep, the folks that were backing the Seventh Warlord. I mean, how mercenary, crass, and bluntly overt is that? This is just a war bond selling thing, which is basically funding the war profiteers who became billionaires out of making the weapons that saved the Soviet Union. And so Captain America was particularly a wartime propaganda stunt, and Superman as well. He joined the army, and you might be interested to know that Superman supports bombing of cities as well. There he is sitting on one of these massive bombs going down for carpet bombing, saturation bombing, terror bombing of civilian centers, incinerating cities. Champion of the Oppressed. This is a book on the role of Marvel's wartime comic heroes. Notice how the Champion of the Oppressed supports the Red Army. There's the Soviet Union's Red Army with a hammer and sickle coming in to loot and pillage Berlin in the worst atrocities ever seen in the history of mankind. No city suffered as Berlin suffered under that rapist bunch of Marxists. The savagery of what they poured out in Berlin. No people in history have suffered anything like that. If you doubt that, read Hellstorm. Did you know that Superman is Jewish? And did you notice that his number one nemesis is Lex Luther. Lex is Latin for law. And Luther, well, we know the most famous Luther is the founder of the Protestants. And therefore, Lex Luther, the law, and the Protestants are the nemesis of Superman, who, we could add also, Wonder Woman was started in the First World War to promote war against Germany and to demonize the enemy. And the latest Wonder Woman film, whatever you think of it, there's whole documentaries being produced on the feminist, anti-Christian, anti-male aspects of this. And the Christian imagery, she smashes and destroys the church steeple. She uses men to leverage up, stepping on the men to climb up, to reach the top of the church, to obliterate the church steeple. And the imagery, when she becomes like Christ, risen from the dead, and rises up with supernatural power above the earth. Superman does the same. They have so much anti-Christian imagery amongst these superheroes. And I don't know how many people realize you're not just being entertained, you're being propagandized. And there's documentaries of it about how Jewish, I should say anti-Christian, American comics developed a whole art form to trivialize what used to be a book reading society into a comic strip reading, and prepared people for what we're now getting with Hollywood comic strip come to the big screen. Talking about fake heroes, these must be three of the worst. As a missionary to persecuted Christians, I discovered when I went into Eastern Europe, the people in Eastern Europe were not impressed with our theory of the Second World War, that we saved the world for democracy, or that we are fighting for Christian civilization. The Christians in Finland, Romania, Bulgaria, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Hungary, they told me we were fighting for Christian civilization against the Soviet Union. You betrayed us to the Soviet Union. I said, whoa, what do you mean? He said, you, the Allies, you English, Americans, South Africans too. Well, we thought we were fighting for civilization and for freedom. But they said, but you weren't. You were saving Stalin, Soviet Union, at Yalta. Your leaders betrayed us. 15 nations, over 100 million Christians behind the Iron Curtain into the hands of Stalin, Soviet Union, NKVD. Brutal. The worst chapter in the history of mankind. These people aren't heroes. These are war criminals, the whole bunch of them. And having worked with Bill Bathman from one part of Eastern Europe all the way down, that's what the Christians in Eastern Europe say. Your heroes are fake heroes. They weren't really heroes. Stalin, you all know, is the biggest mass murderer in history. He took a country that had 50,000 churches and turned it to under 200 churches in the whole of the Soviet Union by 1941. You could say a lot more about that. But you don't need to build iron curtains and shoot people in the back when you've liberated them. The iron curtain stands as concrete proof that we did not liberate Eastern Europe. We betrayed them under communism. And as for other heroes in Hollywood, I've got nothing against these people in particular, but not one of them has served in a war. Only one of them that I know of served in the army, and that would be Schwarzenegger. Arnold Schwarzenegger did his national service in the Austrian army in the tank corps. But I don't think any one of these great action heroes of Hollywood has ever served in the military in any war, or ever heard a shot fired in anger, or ever risked their life in a war zone for any cause whatsoever. And yet they are, in many people's minds today, the epitome of heroes. Now, King David was a real hero. He went out and he took out Goliath. These guys are fakes. Talk about fake candidates. Let me tell you, old Julius Juju was the youth leader of the ANC. In 2012, the ANC had a massive national convention where they decided on the second phase of the revolution. They called it second phase of transformation. And the need to create a new party, which they called the vanguard of the revolution. Well, Eva Skillick, would you believe it, 6 months later, Juju, their youth leader, goes out and starts the EFF, a new political party. Apparently a deserter of the ANC. Apparently in opposition to the ANC. Time has proved that he's nothing of the sort. He's a complete fake candidate. He's owned by the ANC. He's the same thing as the ANC. And we know this, because even if his supporters on the ground think there's a difference, their policy is the same. Has he ever, if he was an economic freedom fighter, why has he not campaigned against the economic lockdown, which is the greatest oppression of the poor people in this country in history? Has he ever dealt with the real issue? And when he proposed expropriation of farmlands without compensation, everyone in the ANC members of parliament voted with him. Now, if he was a traitor, a turncoat, a deserter, an enemy, competition, they wouldn't have voted for his bill. Even if they liked it, they would have proposed their own after defeating it. But every single ANC member of parliament supported him. He is a fake candidate. He's what you call plausible deniability, vanguard of the revolution. The ANC and the EFF are the same. Now, most of you were not around when this horrible specimen was National Secretary of the National Party. This character was made Minister of Defence by F.W. de Klerk. Now, P.W. Botha had a real general, a combat general, Magnus Malan, as Minister of Defence. You could respect him. He's a soldier who knew what he was doing, even if he's a bit politicised. But Rolf Meyer, we called him the canary, because all he'd ever done in the army was sing in the choir. Well, you notice here, he's telling you to vote for the ANC. And this is in 2019's elections. And this is after Ramaphosa had come out with expropriation without compensation. This turncoat, lying, treacherous Volksfire tells you to vote for the ANC. Now, he was the National Party's Minister of Defence under de Klerk, who dismantled the whole SADF. Dismantled the Marines, State Presence Guard, betrayed 3-2 Battalion, Bushman's Battalion, the whole lot. Complete nuts a traitor. You can tell that it's no longer a conspiracy theory because he's come out and said, vote for the ANC, and I support Cyril Ramaphosa, and he even said I support expropriation without compensation in the interview promoting Cyril for last for the year and a half ago's election. It should be, the F shouldn't be there. It should be a better lie for all. Working together, we can do so much more crime. This man, Rolf Meyer, was the National Party's number one negotiator at CADESA, who put in all these wonderful safeguards. That means none of us need to worry about life, safety, Bill of Rights, property rights, and all that stuff. And at the time, I knew he was a traitor. I met him back in 1991 with an Africa Christian Action delegation on the steps of Pretoria City Hall with Ed Kane. And Ed Kane had only just started a few sentences in. A very senior man, double my age at the time and double Rolf Meyer's age too. And there was Ed Kane quietly, patiently, factually presenting, as he always did in a very calm academic way. And Rolf Meyer was rude as hell, saying, there's no threat from the left. The ANC is not a threat to the country. It's you. It's you right-wing fundamentalist Christians. You're the only threat. And as he was talking like this, I said, excuse me, Mr. Mayor. There's no need for that kind of talk here. And he whirled around and said, and I know who you are, Peter Hammond. I know you. What do you just say to that? That's Ralph Mann, 1991. And we were thinking, where's this come from? Where's this hostility? I was a law and order, support the SADF, fight communism, Christian. I was rock solid behind what publicly was the policy of the National Party. And this man was the National Secretary of the National Party. And by the way, do you know, in 1993, this cretin employed some witch doctors to design a new corporate image for the National Party, which they made some scrambled eggs and so on, and which is a new party logo. And he then had these witch doctors sacrifice a goat and dedicate the National Party's offices in Soweto. And they wrapped some entrails of the goat around Ralph Mayer, the National Secretary of the National Party and Minister of Defense at one time. I don't know what you've got to do to get excommunicated from your church in this country, but apparently his congregation did not think that was violating the faith. Fake candidates. Now, what about Cruella de Vil, Patricia de Vil? When she was head of the PAC, when she was in the top leadership of the PAC, Upler, the terrorist of the ANC, of the PAC, attacked St. James Church of England. Machine gunned, grenaded, abused, crippled people there. Tomorrow, you'll have the opportunity to hear from Sholf and Baker, who was there, and who was the one who shot back and cut short the attack. Well, the next week, the PAC said there's no way they were responsible. Well, about a week later, they said, we did it. Talk about fakes. I saw Auntie Pat, as she likes to call herself now, Cruella de Vil, Patricia de Vil, marching in Claremont, past St. James Church, 1 month after the church attack, marching to Claremont Police Station to demand the release of the ANC the PAC terrorists who had been caught there, the Upler terrorists, who admitted later they were responsible for the St. James attack. And as they were marching, I heard them chant, and she was in the front row, one church, one bomb, one minister, one bullet. Over and over, could not mistake it. Sadly, before the days of social media, all I had was a still camera. Well, her Upler terrorist later admitted this. This is the one Charles shot. And later they admitted that the Truth and Reconciliation Committee and so on, yep, we were ordered. We even had Letlapa McLeary, the commander of the Upler unit who gave the order to attack, who said the order came right from the top, in our mission at devotions, telling us firsthand. Well, Cruella de Vil suddenly switched to ID, Independent Democrats. Then, quick as a flash, she became DA. And she was given the jewel and the crown of the DA, Cape Town, to be mayor of Cape Town, mother city, which she turned into us having to carry buckets of water, worst water mismanagement ever. And then she became the good party and called herself Auntie Pat. And now she's joined the ANC. So she changes political affiliations more than some of us change suits. God will destroy those who promote falsehood. There's some people who like the victimhood card because it's get out of responsibility free. Psalm 5 verse 6 says, you will destroy those who speak falsehood. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man. Well, we can talk about fake votes. Do you know, in 2016, they had presidential elections in Austria, which resulted in the Freedom Party of Austria bringing an appeal to the Constitutional Court, claiming 500,000 ballots were invalid. Non-citizens and minors had been allowed to vote. A lot of irregularities, to put it nicely, absentee ballots significantly affected the outcome. And the Freedom Party presidential candidate, Norbert Hofer, had lost to the socialist Van der Bellen by a mere 30,000 votes. The court found that more than twice that number had been affected by breaches of the electoral code. Therefore, the Constitutional Court of Austria ordered the presidential election second round be held again. Declaring, it is completely clear to the Constitutional Court that the laws regulating an election must be rigorously applied. This must rule out abuse and manipulations. Well, makes sense for Austria. Well, voter fraud and election rigging is notoriously prevalent in Africa. In fact, we make lots of jokes about it. Like in Zimbabwe, when they said that Mugabe has complained that the election results have been stolen a week before the election. And, you know, things like that. I mean, this is standard jokes in Africa. But for some reason, the people in America seem skeptical and naive about fraud known elections. Look, Snopes puts on misleading. How would they know? They have no possible investigative ability, experience, training, or credibility. Snopes is a fake news outlet. The Heritage Foundation, a very respected heavyweight organization in America, found more than 1,000 instances of documented voter fraud in the United States over 20 years, not counting the industrial level of fraud in the 2020 elections, which is calculated to exceed 11 million fake votes. Do you know that the last American elections had 11 million more votes than people who voted? That's phenomenal. How do you get that? Wow. Record. There's some counties in America that had 150% voter turnout. Now, in the 1994 elections in South Africa, we had 104% voter turnout, which was record-breaking. Some counties in America got 200% voter turnout. Others got 300% voter turnout. There's one that had a 350% voter turnout. I tell you, this is record-breaking and impressive indeed. Well, the New York Post has published confessions of a voter fraud. I was a master at fixing mail-in ballots. That was published as recently as August 2020. And this whistleblower described himself as a political insider, a Bernie Sanders Democrat diehard, said there's no race in New Jersey from city council to United States Senate that we have not worked on. This operative declared that voter fraud with mail-in ballots is no myth. He knows this because he's been doing it on a grand scale for decades. This whistleblower, who has an identity rap sheet and long history working as a consultant on various political campaigns, was confirmed by the Post. He said he had not only changed votes himself, he had led teams of fraudsters, he had mentored at least 20 other operatives in New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania, which is one of the big fraud states right now. He and his operatives fanned out, going house to house, convincing voters to let them mail their completed ballots on their behalf as a public service. They would take sealed envelopes home, hold them over boiling water, loosen the glue, remove the real ballot, place the counterfeit ballot inside the signed certificate, reseal the envelope. He said sometimes postal employees were in on the scam and filled out ballots which came from Republican strongholds they just threw into the garbage. In fact, in 2017, hundreds of mail-in ballots in New York City, which had never arrived at the Board of Electors, was discovered as these baskets of 2016 mail were put to one side at the Brooklyn Processing Center until the election was over and too late. Mail-in fraudsters target assisted living, age-old homes, helping the elderly to fill out their ballots. Nursing homes are goldmine for votes, they said, especially inactive or deceased voters. In fact, they've documented that tens of thousands of dead people voted in the last elections in America. There are people, 150 and 200, who voted in the last election. Democrats would go to homeless shelters and literally pay people to register and vote the way they dictated. The whistleblower said that organizationally, the voter fraud schemes resembled the mafia. Campaign manager controlled the fraudsters to harvest voter details and stuff ballots. He noted that normally the actual candidate would be kept in the dark so that they could maintain plausible deniability. Various states sent out an unprecedented 80 million unsolicited ballots to voters in the mail in 2020. Then you get fake elections. Over 40 years ago, the country in which I grew up, Rhodesia, was betrayed in the hands of communist mass murderer Robert Mugabe and his Marxist ZANU-PF terrorist organization. Mugabe is remembered as the Marxist who was propelled into power by Jimmy Carter's State Department and the British Foreign Office in violation of the Lancaster House Agreement of 1979. Lord Arthur Christopher Soames, a son-in-law of Winston Churchill, British appointed governor of Rhodesia during the transition period, he was responsible to ensure free and fair elections in accordance with the Lancaster House Agreement, and for this purpose, the Rhodesian army and police were confined to barracks, as were the terrorists, and the British police and army were there to ensure free and fair elections. However, while Soames acknowledged that Mugabe's ZANU-PF was engaged in widespread, systematic violations and terrorism, intimidating the voters, he refused to dismiss the obvious fraudulent votes in favour of Mugabe. In blatant violation of the Lancaster House Agreement, Soames handed over the government of Rhodesia to Mugabe and his disqualified terrorist movement with disastrous consequences to all. Most were shot in front of their families and fellow villagers in public executions, often being forced to dig their own graves. And while American voters got rid of Jimmy Carter 40 years ago, the long-suffering people of Zimbabwe are still stuck with Jimmy Carter's foreign policy legacy, as are the poor people of Iran, I might add. Another high policy goal of Jimmy Carter was the betrayal of the Shah of Iran, one of America's best allies in the Middle East, into the hands of the Ayatollah Khomeini. Boy, did that work out well. The breadbasket of Rhodesia became the Zimbabwean basket case. And while Rhodesia used to export food, Zimbabwe still needs millions of tons of relief aid to survive. More than half of the total population of Zimbabwe has fled the country, a vote of no confidence in liberation. With over 90% of the population unemployed, with skyrocketing inflation, everyone in Zimbabwe is suffering worse than ever before in history. But as the Zimbabwean election observers noted, the British Foreign Office and the American State Department taught Mugabe and other dictators in Africa an important lesson. It doesn't matter how much they lied, cheated, intimidated, terrorized, murdered, how many opposition candidates were beaten up, assassinated, or their supporters blown up in buses or trucks en route to the electoral process, as long as Mugabe could claim that he'd won the election, he would be accepted and he would be respected. As a member of the United Nations and the African Union, he'd continue to receive foreign aid. Allowing voter fraud in 1980 has continued to have a catastrophic consequence with deadly results for millions of Zimbabweans ever since. Lies bring bondage. There's no such thing as a harmless lie. Fake ballots, fake elections have disastrous consequences. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. You could write Peter 2 verse 19 over every one of these so-called freedom fighters. I defy anyone to find one example of any freedom fighter anywhere who has produced freedom. Any Marxist revolutionary terrorist who's improved the life of his country. In every case, they've made a bad situation vastly worse, or a good situation terrible. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. No wonder General George S. Patton said, "Politicians are the lowest form of life on earth. Liberal Democrats are the lowest form of politician." Then you get fake civil servants. By the way, you notice this chap here? Minister of Finance in South Africa, in South African Parliament, playing a computer game while they're discussing the economics bill in Parliament. He wasn't even sleeping like most of the rest of the Parliament. A nation of sheep breeds a government of wolves. As Margaret Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is sooner or later you run out of other people's money. And you've heard of BBBEE, broad-based black economic empowerment. Well, if you want to destroy a people, you give them freebie things, a sense of victimhood, entitlement, and you just pour benefits on them. That's the way to destroy people. This is the worst thing that could ever happen to any people, is to give them a sense of victimhood, a sense of entitlement, and freebies. And so we've got so-called civil servants. They're not civil, and they sure don't serve. And they don't protect either. And I don't know that you would feel that safe looking at this sort of thing, but at least the police are sometimes the first on the scene of an accident. Hand in your firearms, they'll be looked after at the police station. Yep, there's even a captain. Then you get fake pandemics, and we don't need to say much about that COVID cult. We've got a presentation coming up on that soon. You get fake ministers. We get fake ministers not only performing fake marriages, but blessing abortion clinics. Gay pride is the reason why Sodom got fried. God is not very into this thing. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. You get fake churches. You could be forgiven for thinking that looked like a discotheque. Over 130 years ago, William Booth, the founder of the Salvation Army, warned us, the chief danger of the 20th century will be religion without the Holy Spirit, Christianity without Christ, forgiveness without repentance, salvation without regeneration, and heaven without hell. He also said, in politics without God. Professor Martin Luther warned us that a religion that gives nothing, costs nothing, and suffers nothing is worth nothing. Boy, are we being deluged with fake healings. Tens of thousands a month by any estimation. Fake miracles boggles the brain. And yet, you know, all over the streets when we do street evangelism, we meet the disillusioned, cynical, what do we call them, inoculated anti-Christians as a result. I tried this Christianity. It doesn't work. What do you mean it doesn't work? I didn't get my healing. I didn't keep my healing. I didn't win the lottery. Dead serious, I didn't win the lottery. That's been a reason why a person said Christianity didn't work. See, what gospel did you hear? And this is the point. There's a lot of fake miracles, fake healings, fake ministers, fake faith. This character, Todd Bentley, is that the name? I think it's Todd Bentley. He says that an angel called Emma told him to cover his body in tattoos. I checked out somebody who knows about that and says the cost of his full sleeve, full body tattoos would have been $100,000 at that time. So an angel told him to violate the commands of God, that God hates tattoos, abomination, that sort of thing, don't tattoo your flesh. But an angel told him to waste $100,000. Now, I don't know, I've got a few thousand ideas of better things you could do with $100,000 that might advance the Great Commission. But putting tattoos on a person's body doesn't seem to be one of them. This man claims to have pioneered a revival. An angel told him to do it, so touch not God's anointed. As Vody Buckham put it so well, the Lord told me is no substitute for the Bible says. It doesn't matter what you say. It doesn't matter what I say. It doesn't matter what they say. What matters is what the Bible says. But many prefer to turn away from the truth and prefer false teachers. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. But according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they'll heap up for themselves teachers, and they'll turn their ears away from the truth, and they'll turn aside to fables. We live in a generation of emotionally weak people. Everything has to be watered down because it's offensive, including the truth. The truth is very offensive. But the truth does not change just because you don't want to hear it. There's a big difference between fake and fact. We've got to make sure we're on the fact side. There's a lot of people who prefer to put their proverbial head in the sand. But do you like being lied to? We are being subjected to the most pervasive tsunami of disinformation in history. When my parents were growing up, this was the adverts they got. You need to smoke Lucky Strike to protect your throat. If a person's got a radio ministry, they need to smoke because smoking is good for your health. In fact, 20,679 physicians say Lucky Strikes are less irritating on your throat. Your throat protection against irritation, against coughing. To improve your lungs, you need to smoke cigarettes. And I'm sure that this statistic of physicians is completely fabricated. I mean, really. But there were doctors who were taking part in these adverts. In the 1990s, Al Gore predicted the end of the polar ice caps. By 2013, by 2013, there will not be any ice left at the North or South Pole. And most of the cities of the world, including Cape Town, will be deep underwater and because oceans will have risen. Actually, polar ice caps have grown 43%, but don't mind. And so on and so forth. Media deception is this easy. The top is actually that. That's how you deceive. Most people have been deceived, manipulated by the screen. And so many people have been called the sheeple. It's propaganda. Sly magazine has put some of the most vile characters on the planet on their covers, including this dirty, unwashed Marxist mass murderer who boasted that he killed 4,000 people in cold blood. Execution. Men, women, and children. Che Guevara. And there are millions of people who wear this creep's image on their t-shirt, including Christians. There's a war on free speech and there's a war on free thought. But remember these words, Veritas Venit, which was the battle cry of Professor of Prague University, Jan Hus, truth conquers. Under the duties required in the Ninth Command, the Westminster Larger Catechism lists the duty of preserving and promoting the truth, the duty to stand for the truth and to do so from the heart, the duty to speak the truth and only the truth in matters of judgment and justice. Under sins forbidden in the Ninth Command, the Westminster Standards includes the sin of giving false evidence, the sin of lying, the sin of concealing the truth. By the way, I thought these people were enemies. Do you think you could fake body language like that? Did you think you could fake body language like that? That's meant to be the opposition. Muzimani, meant to be a pastor, by the way, even though he's pro-abortion, pro-homosexual, marriage and all that stuff. But he was the head of the DA. That's just meant to be his enemy when he is the head of the DA. The sin of misconstruing intentions. The sin of exaggerating. The sin of perverting the truth to a wrong meaning. Lies, omissions, distortions, are all the hallmark of propaganda. In the book of Revelation, we're told that at the end, God will send an angel to bind Satan so that he might deceive the nations no more. That includes Hollywood's distortion of history. How many of you would have seen the film The Patriot? Anyone? Okay. The most gut-wrenching scene in this film is totally fabricated. There never was a scene in the American War between the States where British soldiers herded civilians in a church and burned it down on top of it. But because of Hollywood's principle that you must demonize the enemy, whoever the enemy is, it's not good enough that they're the other team or the opposition. You've got to demonize the enemy. And they normally do this by completely fabricated words or events. Burning Christians in a church building is what communists and Islamic jihadists have done in the 20th and 21st century. No Christian people, even if they were bad people, but from a Christian background, would ever do that in that time, in the 18th century. What about the lie, animals do not have souls? I've had so many people say, the Bible says animals do not have souls. Really? Take penguins. Many birds, they mate for life. They're inflexibly loyal to the mate. In fact, they're far more loyal to their mates and their family than most human beings. The Hebrew word nefesh is translated soul more than 130 times in the Old Testament. The same Hebrew word nefesh, which is translated soul whenever it refers to man, is translated beast, or living creature, or life when referring to animals. So Genesis 1:21, when referring to God creating whales and every living creature which moves in the birds in the air, and the same word nefesh is used. So our people are saying, the Bible says animals do not have souls. Where does it say it? They turn to, and God breathed into Adam, and he became a living soul. Yes, but the same word is used, nefesh, in Hebrew, when referring to the creating of the whales and the birds of the air. You've just disproved your point. When God made a covenant with Noah and every living creature, the same word, nefesh, is used to refer to the animals in Genesis 9. Proverbs 12 verse 10 says, a good man is kind to his animals, but the wicked are cruel to them. And it used the word again, nefesh, synonymously with animal, a living soul. In fact, it's only in the Renaissance secular humanists that they questioned that animals had souls. And it's sad that Christians, which through the centuries never questioned that animals had souls, suddenly came to accept the secular humanist view. The Bible is clear. Animals have souls. The life of the flesh is in the blood. The soul is in the blood. The word nefesh is even translated psyche in the Greek Septuagint. Throughout the history of the church, Christians believed animals have souls. It's only from the time of the humanist enlightenment that the existence of animal souls was questioned. Can you doubt animals have souls if you've ever dealt with animals, if you've had a pet, if you've interacted with them? Do they have memory? Do they have character? Do they have personality? Ecclesiastes 3:21 speaks of the spirit, the ruach of an animal. There's no doubt that God is spirit. And those who worship God must worship him in spirit and in truth. So to worship God, you've got to have a spirit. Yet the Psalms and Revelation repeatedly speak of the animals worshiping God. So, yes, animals are not created in the image of God, but neither are angels created in the image of God. But angels will be in heaven. I've got a website, thebibleandanimals.org, and Facebook pages, Wonderful Wildlife, We Love God's Animals, dedicated to ministering to people's understanding of wildlife and our stewardship for God's creation. And the fact that the Bible speaks of animals being in heaven affects every creature. Main point is caution. The media is not a reflection of reality. In fact, they like to invert reality. So, questions, comments, complaints or criticisms? Just getting the ball rolling about questioning what we get in the media. Standing for truth in a fake world. Questions? We do have a mic. Any questions? Complaints or criticisms? So, there's full agreement. Nothing I said was controversial. No questions at all. Alistair. Say again? I didn't say that. insects are not described in that way. No, but there's no doubt about warm-blooded living mammals. Birds, the mammals and so on are described as nefesh, having the breath of life. And I think we know that if we've got cats or dogs. I've had relationships with some wild animals too. I've got no doubt whatsoever they had souls. Yes, other questions? Yes.
They found it not fair, but they all did the wrong things.
I don't think I've understood or heard the word correctly. Are you talking about farming?
Talking about fake and truth.
Like, oh, fakes. Right.
What if one has like his family and friends that they want to, you know, inform about the truth, but the family and friends doesn't believe or don't believe the family, they don't believe the child.
Yes, it's true. Yes, well, I had the problem of being the youngest in my family, and so being the baby brother and so on, nobody wanted to take me seriously. And the first year when I got converted, everybody got a Bible for Christmas, and I still remember the eyes rolling and the sort of, this irritating religious fanatic. There I was, 17 years old, trying to win my elder brother and parents, and my parents were so negative. They'd gone through the Second World War. They were so. They said, if you'd gone through the Second World War like us, you wouldn't believe that there could be a God. And so my parents were very secular. And it's only God's grace that after many years, my parents did come to the Lord. My brother and my sisters too, which was hard because they did not take anything I said seriously. It took years for them to take the baby of the family seriously. And I think we've got to be very patient because the toughest mission field has got to be your own family. If you converted and you're in a secular family, it's going to be difficult. Now, if you're the father of the family or the grandfather and you get converted, that's different. You've got a status that they might listen to more readily. But from a child witnessing to parents, wow, it's hard. But I can encourage you to persevere because ultimately, even my father, it took 8 years, but finally my father even surrendered to Christ. And that was not easy. Of course, God did some hard work too. Strokes, heart attacks, emphysema. You know, if we won't listen when God speaks, then God can increase the volume. And a loving God won't let us continue in our rebellion to him. And so it's merciful sometimes when we end up in an accident or have something terrible happen because it stops us. As the first mission I worked in, Hospital Christian Fellowship, planted by Francis Grimmie, said, when you're in hospital, God has your attention. You're looking in the right direction for once. And it's true. Hospitals are a magnificent area for ministry. That's why this lockdown forbidding hospital visitations and preventing normal chaplaincy work is one of the worst things. Do you know, in fact, Jonathan could perhaps correct me if this is wrong, but as far as I know, it's still illegal to visit prisoners under lockdown. That's just wicked. People in hospital, the people in old age homes are not allowed to have family members visit. I think that's just so cruel. But is that still so? That's absolutely cruel. Any other comments? Jan?
I know if you're recording with questions and whether you can hear them, but I'm concerned listening to your presentation in the sense that clearly that history that you presented there of corruption and fake news comes a long way. And one of the reasons why I'm attending on your invitation this BWS is sadly, it seems that the world born generation of the baby boomers and some of the millennials had allowed this to continue to the extent it is today. My question to this group, which I hope you would have answered by the end of this course, is by which generation are we going to say the buck stops here? That's my question, because of the long history of what we've said.
Yes, it's not like deception just started since social media began. We've been having massive deception for a long time. In fact, you could say that social media has provided a way to go past the mass media, which was the most locked down. And so at last you're hearing some other voices because the mass media has been suppressing it for generations. That's a very good question. How do we discern or find truth? Aside from, obviously, the Bible is the gold standard. But when it comes to recent history, for example, so to me, I've been very blessed to have been brought up in Rhodesia, to have met people like Ian Smith multiple times, to have met people like General Walls, to have met Ron Reed Daly and legends in the Rhodesian time. I met a man and used to have tea with him and discuss with him who had been on the Pioneer Column in 1890, had come up with Mr. Rhodes into Rhodesia. I met with, in ministry in old age homes, a lady who had ridden with Christian De Wet on commando during the Anglo-Boer War, and other people had been in the concentration camps in the Anglo-Boer War. I've met people who've been in the First World War, Second World War. Obviously, when I was a lot younger, I knew people in the First World War. But those are now, it seems so long ago. It's over 100 years ago, the First World War. But when I was younger, I met people who were involved and spoke to them and got some insights. So because I've traveled to 42 countries, and I've had the opportunity of learning from the persecuted church, my views of Second World War changed dramatically because I was hearing the Romanian perspective and the Bulgarian and the Hungarian, the Latvian, Lithuanian, Finnish perspective, which revolutionized my understanding of recent history. Now, because I've worked with the persecuted church in Africa, in the Congo, Nigeria, and Sudan, so to me, first thing is I'd say, you've got to read some key books like, if you've read Richard Wurmbrand's Tortured for Christ from Romania, if you've read Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago on what happened in Russia in the concentration camps, and you start to get the other side, things that are not going to be pushed in the main media, that helps. So there's nothing like firsthand. So I can tell you what I personally saw in Sudan, bombing of Sudan, putting faith in the Pine Sudan, Islamic terrorism, and then you get somebody who has come out of, say, Planned Parenthood, Abby Johnson. You find out what it was like to be on the other side, to be a Planned Parenthood abortion provider, and then she's a whistleblower. We showed the film Unplanned last year. And so I would say the best you can do is try and get the eyewitnesses in the first hand. That's always better. A textbook, some mainstream something, worthless, almost inevitably lies or distortions. So when you get an opportunity to hear from someone who's actually been there. Now, tomorrow, you'll have Scholf and Baker, who's actually at St. James Church when they attacked it. If you want to know what it's like to be on a naval ship that sinks, we've got the man who was actually on the President Kruger, right here, Johan Mankies, was on the President Kruger when it went down. One of the most catastrophic, traumatic events in South African Navy history, in recent history. You want to learn from somebody who's been in the places. That means a lot. I remember I had all kinds of ideas, but when I went in the mission field, a lot of those ideas just changed. And there's nothing like coming under fire or being arrested or imprisoned to change your perspective. And then you meet people there. And so I've always preferred to learn from people who are real. On Saturday, you're going to meet Anthony Stunder, who was a parabat, involved in the thick of the fights in Angola, became a bank robber, went to prison for life, was in one of the worst, darkest, and his, as he said, a real terrible heathen, and how the grace of God broke through and saved him in prison. Now that's real. When you meet reality like that, that trumps any fake garbage from Hollywood any day of the week. And so that to me has been the adventure in my life. I've met so many real, major, serious people. And I suppose it might have started with the fact that my own mother was brought up in Berlin and went through 62,000 bomber raids, aerial bombardments, and the trauma of occupation. My father was in North Africa. I remember speaking to my dad after some TV shows, and he'd shake his head and say, it wasn't like that. Now, here's a North African 8th Army fighting in Africa. Cool. You watch a Hollywood film, say, that's rubbish. That never happened. There were no atrocities in North Africa. Cool, we're gentlemen. It's an honorable war. We sang hymns and carols to one another. To hear from somebody who's been there. Now, I'm a moth, Memorial Order Tin Hat. I meet a lot of old people over the years. Some of them have been veterans in the First, Second World War, Korean War, Vietnam War, Rhodesian War. My brother was in Rhodesian War. And when you hear from different veterans stories, and then you see some Hollywood depiction, I mean, that's why I am like I am. I have zero respect for Hollywood, these pathological lies, the antichrist prejudices, and the school textbooks that totally distort reality. I've got confidence in what I believe because I've met people who are there. Or in some cases, I even was there myself. So that to me is key, firsthand. And if anyone here is interested in any particular area, ask what books are recommended, or films or documentaries if you prefer. And I'll give within my field of expertise. Of course, if it's science, you must ask Uncle Philip Stott. He will give you on your field of science that you're interested in. So when you find someone who you respect in some area, ask them what they recommend. And so, you know, as a new Christian, I'd be asking Francis Grimm and George Berver and what they recommended, and that's helped guide me on some of my studies. Very good question. Thank you. Any other questions? Comments? Complaints?
So the time was about maybe truth and life and real faith. One of the major life and real ones you can make media is this dialogue. Vote for this or vote for that, whatever it is, put it on my face. Vote for their life so that they can be maybe, right? Mm-hmm. So that would get these to that appropriate so that we can be. This is actually, this seems like an absolute life because we are sharing this place common. I don't even want to call it an outside of our fellow competitors. We are sharing this and this and this and this. But they're all saying, you know, just vote for that and the meaning is going to be. Is that even a thing?
No, but we're going to tackle that. We're going to tackle how to respond to Marxist bullying tactics, how weaponizing words and toxic terminology affects us, how to resist revolution. So we'll get there. Any other comments? Me? Currently is very hard. But in my... There's not much respect now. But in my lifetime, the people I've met, who I'm proud to have met and shaken hands with, include Ian Smith of Rhodesia, a man who said what he meant what he said, a man of integrity, who never enriched himself, ever. And Ian Paisley of Northern Ireland. And P.W. Porter, I met him, knew him. We had the privilege of having his granddaughter on our Great Commission course some time back. I've known his the daughter of P.W. Porter and his son-in-law for over 30 years. And I met P.W. Porter, and he communicated to me by phone and letter several times after he retired too. He's a person who was a man of integrity, so I highly respected him. I must say, Mangosuthu Buthelezi, another man I strongly respect, a man of integrity, really means what he says. I never met Ronald Reagan, but I heard him speak personally. He seemed to me to be a dedicated anti-communist who helped win the Cold War. Jonas Savimbi, a real freedom fighter, who really did fight for freedom against the communists in Angola. Good man. I must say that right now, Margaret Thatcher, best man Britain ever had in the Prime Minister's office in the last how many hundreds of years? Wow. Margaret Thatcher really was the best as a prime minister in Britain. That doesn't mean I agree with everything she did, but she got me out of prison in Zambia, and for that I'm super grateful. And I would say political leaders, boy, we've had a lot of losers and useless, worthless characters. I should say that early in 2016, alone amongst everyone I knew, in my whole circle, I supported Donald Trump's candidacy for the US presidency and was convinced that of all the options, he was the only one who would probably be strong enough. Now, there might be others better or nicer than him, but I couldn't see anyone. I mean, Ben Carson's a great man, but I couldn't see Ben Carson taking the vast pressure which would inevitably come on whoever followed Obama. And so I was convinced Donald Trump was the man, the right man. And while he hasn't done everything I would have liked, he's endured vast amounts of hatred, unprecedented hatred. So I respect him in many ways. Do you know who Donald Trump's pastor was when he grew up? Anyone know? Norman Vincent Peale. He's a lifelong Presbyterian, and his pastor was the author of The Power of Positive Thinking. And Donald Trump says, I got The Power of Positive Thinking every Sunday. He said, I loved church. Well, he's Exhibit A of The Power of Positive Thinking, A plus, at infinity. So has there ever been a more power of positive thinking person in history? Donald Trump is it. So something that might also intrigue you, if you go into the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism Facebook page, I've got the video, it's a very short 5 minutes or so one, of a man who explains about the revival in the New Hebrides Islands, where one of the people involved in this great revival was Donald. And one of the ladies who was affected by this revival there, who had moved to America, when she got married, she chose to name her son Donald, who happens to be Donald Trump. And he's got in the White House on his desk the Bible of Donald, who was involved in the New Hebrides revival. And it's an intriguing connection, but Donald Trump's mother is a God-fearing woman. And it's intriguing to hear some of the backgrounds. Now, I wouldn't say that that would be true of his father. I don't know anything about his father, except that he's a businessman. But interesting that there's a link to a revival in him, right down to the name. And one trusts he turns to the Bible sometimes, but he's been under phenomenal pressure, and the people hate him. But he's made a stand for Christians. Donald Trump's no enemy of Christians. In fact, he's one of the best friends we've had in the White House. In some ways, he's been a better president than even Ronald Reagan. Well, Ronald Reagan was better in other ways. They're not the same. But America's had some very bad presidents. I'd say Donald Trump's one of the best in terms of what he's actually done, economics and so on. He's rolled back some of the... But of course, that's not to say it qualifies the pastor in your church. But as a president at this time, I've had Americans complaining he's not perfect. They said, you don't deserve a perfect president. If you got what you deserve, you'd get another Obama or something. We don't need justice, we need mercy. And I think Donald Trump's been a Cyrus. He's been mercy from God. But I don't know what God's doing in his heart. But there's no doubt there's some spiritual life. There's something going on there. He's praying. He's under such pressure. How has he withstood 4 years of non-stop hatred? I don't think any contemporary of our lifetime has endured that much hatred.